Jets, Giants, Yankees, Knicks, Nets, Islanders, Rangers. It's a wonderful time for sports, good, bad, or indifferent, listeners. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please, pardon my fresh, as we bring you an all-new episode of Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show listeners. Today is Monday, October 21st, 2019, and we're back from our holiday hiatus. And this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing, and we like to thank all of you for the support, and please spread the news about this wonderful sports talk show that we have going on here. Me and Mad Mike are also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, that's L-L-O-Y-D. Be sure to hit that follow button, and if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on this show, always shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website, listeners. We have a great show for you today. Obviously, we got to talk some MLB playoff baseball concerning the New York Yankees. We got to talk some basketball as the season opens up this week, listeners. We got to talk some football. We may talk some hockey. There's a lot going on, listeners. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we gotta find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm on my way to the Meadowlands. That's all we got left in New York is New York freaking football. I guess you could say we got basketball too, but you know, with the news that New York Knicks players are already upset with play, you know, minute distribution, who knows how long it's going to take for that to go off the rails.
Listen, we're going to talk about basketball. We're going to talk about some football. But let's start this show off, Mad Mike, with our New York Yankees, who are broken after this cruel ending of losing to the Houston Astros. And in an eye blink, Mad Mike, it was a game of it all. It's hard to believe, you know, they came back a half an inch from the brink of extinction. You figured a dream season, you know, stuffed with 108 victories of all make and model and all variants and variety, a chance to win a 28th World Series, Mad Mike. All of it gone in a flash, gone in a blur, going in a spaz of raw, abject heartache, Mad Mike. In an eye blink, Mad Mike, Jose Altuve joined the ranks of Yankees October serial killers, Mad Mike, forming an whole unholy alliance, okay, alongside Luis Gonzalez, Edgar Martinez, Bill Mazeroski, a quartet of saboteurs who have eliminated our team with one well time, depending on your point of view, ill-timed swing of a bat, okay? So, mainly different emotions, Mad Mike, all right? Yankees manager Aaron Boone was quoted saying following a 6-4 loss that delivered, you know, a pennant to Houston for the second time in 3 years. You know, he was quoted as saying, it's the ultimate pain you can feel of sports, knowing all that so many put into it, knowing how good of a club we have, for it to end that way is hard. Our guys are hurting. Obviously, you know, you would like to think so. Okay, Mad Mike, but here's what I wanted to kind of touch up on before I continue and get your thoughts on it. Okay, one of the biggest things we both said coming into this series, Mad Mike, was the Yankees starting pitching. Now, I will say, Mad Mike, I don't think the starters did that bad of a job. Okay, you may feel differently. I don't think the starters did that bad of a job. The Achilles heel for this team, Mad Mike, was supposed to be the strength of this team, and it was the bullpen.
Well, see, like I said before, listen, I told you this before the playoffs started. I've said it. Nothing that I'm going to say today is going to make me a hypocrite because I believe in a certain brand of baseball the Yankees don't play. But I don't think the bullpen was their Achilles heel. I think one bullpen pitcher had a bad playoff, and that was Ottavino. And I happen to think that that's the only mistake that Aaron Boone made in this entire playoffs was when he took out Chad Green, who was dealing in game two, and put in Adam Ottavino. The only reason I say what led me to question them is Ottavino had a bad September. And then in the Twin Series, they know that they went in the Twin Series and they said, if anybody reaches base on Adam Ottavino, he's coming out of the game. Why? Because he is not controlling the run game. He's one of the worst pitchers in the league in controlling the run game. Not only that, but he's one of the worst pitchers in allowing inherited runners to score. I usually refrain from advanced analytics, but today I am going to get into it, you know, later after, you know, we dissect this all. But their starters weren't a problem, but the Yankees don't trust their starters. Brian Cashman's philosophy is not to let his starters go deep into a game. He does not want his starters to see a lineup a third time around. And you got to ask yourself if that philosophy is a winnable philosophy, if that's a title-winning philosophy.
Look, here's my thing, man, Mike. And you know, when you think about it, Tanaka pitched a heck of a game one. Okay, game two, the Yankees were up 2-1. They ended up losing that game.
Yeah, but look, Lloyd, that's proof. Tanaka pitched a hell of a game, and he didn't even – they pulled him without even getting 80 pitches after five innings. After five innings, because it took him so little to get through the order twice, they just decided that he's not going to see this lineup a third time, regardless of how he's doing.
Yeah, you know, and that goes to that analytical thing we were saying. That Aaron Boone is very analytical. He's a very analytical.
I don't think it has anything to do with Boone. I just think
I'm not saying it has something to do with Boone, but what I'm saying is, if you look at all these games that the Yankees lost, it wasn't on the starters, Mad Mike. It wasn't on the starters. The bullpen gave up a home run in game two, okay? And then game three, what was it, game three, the Yankees lost that game. Who pitched that game? Was it Severino?
Severino got touched four innings, two runs.
I think Severino gave up, what, three runs or two runs?
Two runs and four innings.
Okay, he gave up two runs and four, and as the bullpen took over, they ended up losing that game 6-7. They gave up six runs or ended up giving up six runs to Houston, or whatever the case may be in that game. And then Masahiro Tanaka came in and gave up three runs in that game. They ended up losing that game, but then the bullpen, again, what's his name? The closer, I'm drawing a blank.
Chapman.
You know, Chapman gave up a home run to Altuve. So what I'm saying is, you know, you think when you get into the bullpen and it becomes a battle of the bullpens, you would think that the Yankees would come out on top. And believe it or not, a lot of these games was in the hands of the bullpen. Now, could we say that the bullpen may have been overused because saying, you know, the pitches, you know, Aaron Boone yanking the starters or Cashman's philosophy of pitches, the starters not going, you know, but so much, you know.
The Yankees got one quality start in the entire playoffs. Think about that for 1 second. They got one quality start in the entire playoffs. They played nine games and got one quality start. One. A quality start in the Major League Baseball is six innings of three-run ball. And the Yankees got one start of six innings, three-run ball, and that was on Friday night. So they went 2 weeks without a quality start because their playoff started two Fridays back. They went two full weeks without a quality start. Now, me and you can argue why that is. I'll tell you this. We can't blame Severino because Severino, September was his spring training. Severino's only been active for 6 weeks. The amount of spring training. he was not built up for more than four innings or five innings, depending. If he was cruising, they'd squeeze five out of him. He wasn't prepared for more. So automatically they told you my number three starter in the playoffs, that's a bullpen game. If your starter can only go four innings, that's a bullpen game. And then the fourth game of the series, they didn't have a fourth starter, Lloyd. How can your third starter be a bullpen game and your fourth game in a rotation, your fourth man in a rotation is Chad Green, the opener, which is automatically a bullpen game?
But what do we say the Achilles heel of this team was going into this series?
The Achilles heel of this team is poor philosophy. These two teams, the Yankees outscored. They outscored the Houston Astros in this series. But here's the problem. I think we all can agree. These teams are pretty evenly matched. If you want to go to the game seven, if you want to look at what it took for Houston to beat them in this series in six, two walk-offs in Houston. Oh my God, defensive plays out the out their ass, whatever you want to call it. Here's the thing. Houston believes in high contact rate and starting pitching. The New York Yankees believe in high home run rates and elite bullpen. We have to ask the question. You know, is the Yankees philosophy a World Series title winning philosophy? Yeah, it's great over 162 games. It's going to win you 100 games. But you want to know what? The game is still the same. If you strike out too much, if you don't put the ball in play and put pressure on the defense, and you don't have starting pitching, you're not going to win the World Series. You're not going to win the World Series. And I don't know if you pay attention, Fip. I don't know if you put much stock in it, but I do. And what Fip is, it's basically fielding independent pitching, which is basically saying your ERA, a lot of things go into ERA, Lloyd. Good defense, incredible plays, just like you saw last night, two nights ago, Saturday night, whatever the hell it was, with Brantley and Reddick. Those all lead into low ERAs. So what FIP does is FIP takes what your numbers as a pitcher is specifically, and it tells you what your true ERA is. And it tells you if your ERA, you know, if you pitch significantly, you know, if your ERA is indicative of your pitching. How many Yankees do you think is in the top 30 in FIP?
I'm going to say zero.
One.
Close.
One pitcher. Masahiro Tanaka. Gerrit Cole, number 6. Zach Greinke, number 10. Justin Verlander, number 13. That's on a World Series when contending or World Series AL champion Houston, right? If we wanted to look over to the Washington Nationals, Max Scherzer, 7. Steven Strasburg is in the top 25. And Patrick Corbin, 17. Steven Strasburg's 4. He's actually ahead of Max Scherzer. I just gave you 6 guys in the top 17 in baseball pitching on the two teams for the world champions. You're going to tell me starting pitching don't matter, Brian Cashman? You have one guy in the top 30.
Listen, and
not only that,
I'm sorry, again, man.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No. Go ahead. Keep going.
No, I was going to say, in this sense, you know, we talked about, like, I hate to see the Yankees lose, but I'm kind of glad they lose because this is like, to me, it's a super mud pie in Brian Cashman's face. It's a super mud pie in his face because at the trade deadline, you knew what you needed to get, you know what I'm saying, to put this team over top of the Houston Astros because you knew the Houston Astros had a three-headed monster. And then you turn around and you say the one pitcher that you didn't get that you could have possibly gotten, Marcus Stroman, you said he's not good enough. But what starters did this team have, Matt Mike, that proved otherwise?
But, you know, that's what bothers me, Lloyd. They chased Trevor Bauer. You know what Trevor Bauer is? 33rd. He's actually worse than Masahiro Tanaka. That's why the only reason I brought up the FIP numbers is because the Yankees had Gio Gonzalez in the minor leagues and they let him walk. I don't know why they did that. Remember, they didn't want to promote him, so he opted out, became a free agent. Gio Gonzalez was ranked 20th in the league this year. Patrick Corbin, like I just mentioned him, right? He's ranked 17th in the league this year. The same Patrick Corbin the Yankees were willing to let walk over 1 year 1 year in negotiations. They didn't want to give him year six. He's now pitching in a World Series. I'm not saying he's the difference, but he's pitching in a World Series, and you just went out in game six again. You want to tell me Domingo Herman's the reason? You know what Domingo Herman's whip is? FIP? 4.72. 4.72. He is a product of the New York Yankee defense that was much improved this year.
Listen,
I'm over it, man.
I tell you this much, man. Like, remember we, you know, way shows back, you know, we talked about, before the season even started, we talked about as Yankee fans, we felt bamboozled and lied to by the Yankees who said they was waiting to reset the luxury tax and they were going to be aggressive and free agency and yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. And the best signing that the Yankees made was DJ LeMahieu. Okay,
and what reason? What reason did they give?
Right.
What reason did they give?
They caught lightning in the bottle. They wasn't expecting what they got from DJ LeMahieu.
No, they wanted a guy. They wanted a guy with high contact rates who wasn't going to strike out, who was going to put the ball in play, and who had a career average over 300. They were looking for a guy who wasn't going to sell out for home runs, which is fine, Lloyd. It's actually the way it's supposed to be. But in the end of the day, if you're going to talk a good game, like your actions can't contradict the words you're saying. If that's the logic you wanted to take, then to me, why did you re-sign Brett Gardner? And the reason I'm going to say this is because remember something. Since day one, I kept saying, Michael Brantley, Michael Brantley. Why would you take Michael Brantley? Because he's exactly what the Yankees have been looking for. Guys that are looking for short deals, shorter-term deals, looking to rebuild himself in this league. He has spent a couple years injured, but he's a career 300 hitter. He drives his line drives, complete hitter. He uses both sides of the fields. And at that time, I said, what's he going to ask for? $10 million a year. You could. They Houston got him at the same exact contract that we gave DJ LeMahieu. Meanwhile, we said, "Nah, you know what? Brett Gardner. Well, Brett Gardner in this series hit .136 with a .208 on base percentage. Michael Brantley hit .304 with a .407 on base percentage. We could even make the argument that signing that didn't happen is the difference in this series."
Listen, that's a great point, man, Mike. And speaking of Brett Gardner, who's a free agent, let's talk about the Yankees' pending free agents and what they need to do. Obviously, we both can agree that they need starting pitching. Listen, Garrett Cole's a free agent. Strasburg's a free agent. They, you know, Wheeler is Wheeler, right? From the Mets is a free agent. I literally think, man, Mike, that the Yankees need to get at least two of those guys. And then what happens with Brett Gardner? What happens with Didi Gregorius? What happens with Edwin Encarnacion? You know, I think the Yankees might let Didi walk and move Gleyber Torres over to short, put DJ LeMahieu at his actual position, which is second base.
I wouldn't even do that. To be honest with you, I wouldn't even do it.
Is what I'm saying. I guarantee you this is cash.
I would trade. Whatever Garrett Cole wants, Garrett Cole gets. And you know whose money is I'm going to use to get that? CC Sabathia's money, Brett Gardner's money. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to, from that point, I'm picking up, I'm going to pay Garrett Cole. And then I'm using Miguel Andujar. Clint Frazier will replace and his $500,000 salary will go to left field with Mike Topman. And then I'm using Miguel Andujar. I'm using Floreal. And I'm using David Garcia. And I'm trading for Francisco Lindor. So I'm going to land me Cole.
I've heard his name come up in, impossible trade.
Because he's refusing to sign his extension with Cleveland. And you know what? Not for nothing, I don't blame him. Because Cleveland, if you pay him, some of these guys are starting to get smart. If I take the money from them, they're not going to have the money to pay anybody else. And then I'm going to be stuck on a loser for the rest of my career. No. Trade for this guy. Bring in a legit stud pitcher on a free agent market, and then let Didi walk. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I soured on Didi. Didi, to me, reminds me of Starlin Castro. This reminded me of the 2001 playoffs that Alfonso Soriano had. What are you doing swinging first pitch? The bases are loaded. The bullpen, the the kid that pitched, it was yesterday, Saturday night, Urique, that was his first time pitching in the postseason. And you're behind him out swinging at the first pitch. Let's see what the kid got. You, I can tell you for a fact that he this is probably the first time he saw him. There's no history there. He's jumping on the first pitch. I'm over Didi. I would keep LeMahieu in the same role, being a super utility guy. If Rochelle is a flash in the pan, LeMahieu's going to third base for me. Lindor shortstop. Glaber staying there. And then I'm finding myself in first baseman. Because you want to know what? That's something that needs to happen.
Would you entertain picking up the contract of Edwin Encarnacion?
No. Edwin Encarnacion hit. Well, what did Encarnacion hit? 063 this playoff? 063? Why am I picking him up?
Can we not even talk about Giancarlo
Stanton? I'm sorry, 056. 056.
Giancarlo,
you know what I mean?
Stanton, the $30-plus million man.
Who said never.
The same man
you know
who
what?
Played under 20 games during a regular season, during a 162-game span.
I'm not a fan. And I remember what I said. I'm not a fan. I'm a fan of this
man. Sat out in a game-deciding game and couldn't give it a go.
I'm not. I never wanted him. I did not want this guy. If it meant that the purse strings, if it meant that money was not going to be spent, I didn't want nothing to do with him. I said, you know what? This is not. We don't need this right now. We can move. And he. This is him. This has been his whole career, Lloyd. He had two healthy seasons in his entire career. Last year and his MVP season. He's never been healthy his entire career outside of those 2 years. And remember something. He wasn't healthy last year. He just played through the injury last year because we had so many other injuries.
And people was calling Derek Jeter a moron for letting that guy go.
Nah, he's
you know
what I'm saying?
He let him go for a reason.
I'm good. This team has, they have to change their ways. You know what else I'm tired of seeing, Lloyd, from this team? I'm tired of seeing a team that is unwilling take the extra base. This team, because of advanced analytics, and I'm not putting it on the players because I saw really sat down and thought about this yesterday. Really, really, really thought about it after soaking it all in. And I'm just going through the last 2 weeks, and I'm saying, in Game 6, Gary Sanchez walks. And Urshela follows with a bloop single right over the second baseman. And Gary is jogging to second base. And I lost my mind, Lloyd. I'm like, you need to get a better read on that ball. You need to be on third base. That ball was hit so softly that there's no way that they were going to get to that ball in time to throw you out at third base.
It was also another play where in a deciding game, Mad Mike, where Sanchez was on first, and it was a ball thrown into the dirt that kicked high in the air. And I'm saying to myself, like, yo, this dude, even if you're slow, if you have that good baseball instinct and get a good read, you should be on second base. And he was still on first base.
I agree with you, but that's not on the player. And that's exactly where I was going, because I was going to rip him for that, too. That's not on the player. This team has a philosophy that you don't make outs on the bases because they believe so much in the home run. That they are unwilling to take the chance. You see on full counts, they don't put the runner in motion anymore. They are so nervous because they make so little contact swinging for the fences. They swing and they have one of the highest swing and miss rates in baseball. That they're unwilling to take the chance and run. They don't want to make outs on the bases. It's ingrained in these players. So when a ball like that gets away, like you saw, Gary isn't even thinking, get to the next base. Because he's already thinking, if I get thrown out at that base, that's exactly what these guys don't want. They're more upset if I get thrown out at second than if I'm staying at first base. Me and you as fans, we think the other way, which is why we look at him like he's lazy and we're furious. But it's not the case, man. It's not the case.
Well, quick question to you, all right, before we move on. Obviously, the World Series is, you know, we talked about the Yankees and what we feel they need to do in free agency and what we felt they did wrong in this playoff series against Houston. And I agree with you. I felt that the Yankees were evenly matched outside of starting pitching. I thought Houston had the edge in the starting pitching. But outside of that, you know, if you think about everything else the Yankees had an advantage of, that made them evenly matched. You know, as far as the lineup goes and the bullpen goes, that made them an evenly matched team. But now,
well, I'll tell you this: a tired elite reliever. I'd rather have an average rested reliever than a tired elite reliever. So in that case, I don't know if I ever give the Yankees the edge in bullpen in a playoff series.
They do burn. I mean, but that's been a regular season for the Yankees too because of their philosophy.
No, as a matter of fact, no, because John Smoltz actually said it on Saturday night, and it's not something that I even gave thought to. The Yankees in a regular season never pitched one reliever more than 2 days in a row. Now you're asking guys to go out there and pitch 5 days out of six, six out of seven. You're asking them to do things that you condition their arm to not do in a regular season. You're now asking them to do it in October. You know what? I totally forgot about that until you just said that. John Smoltz said it on Saturday night. They're asking their relievers to do things in the playoffs that they basically told them was not needed or they never asked them to do in the regular season. Not one guy did it. It didn't happen not once all year until the playoffs.
All right. So that's a great point. And I didn't even think about that as well. And again, that's a very, very good point to bring up. And, you know, I rescind that. And I agree with you. I definitely agree with you. But we have, a good matchup. Houston versus the Nationals. You know, the Nationals have their three-headed monster with Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin. And Houston has their three-headed monster with Scherzer, Garrett Cole, and Zach Greinke. Who do you have winning the World Series, man, Mike, and in how many games?
I have Houston winning in five games, and it's pretty simple why. Because they're so evenly matched in the starting category, and they're probably evenly matched offensively. Maybe Houston gets a slight edge. I don't think people realize how good offensively Washington is. And they both strike out very little. The difference here is going to be while Houston doesn't have a, you know, elite blow-you-away bullpen, they do have a above-average back end of the bullpen where the Nationals have one of the bottom five worst bullpens in all of baseball. So I think that's where the difference is going to be. You're not going to get to the pens until about the seventh inning in this series for both teams. But I just think that the arms that come out of the Houston bullpen are better equipped to hold games where they are.
And I'm going to agree with you on tenfold on everything that you said. I just don't want Houston to win because I'm being a hater.
You know what? I am, but I agree with you. You beat the Yankees. You're now our rival, and you know to an extent, I feel that way. But
as
Lord,
baseball
let me tell
fans,
you something.
I agree with you. As baseball fans, I think Houston is going to win as well.
If here's the thing, and here's why I'm kind of pulling for them. It's simple. If this is who you have to beat on a yearly basis, and you're the New York, Yankees. This team is going to force you to change your philosophy. They just are. Brian Cashman has to change his philosophy.
Do you really have faith that he's going to do that, Matt Mike? Because he hasn't shown that. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like this dude is pretty much like, you know what it takes to get it done, but you're just being naive.
I don't think he does. See, that's the thing, Lloyd, and that's the thing. A lot of people are like, Brian Cashman rebuilt this thing on a fly. He did a great job. They never had a down season. No, but you want to know what? He's about to miss his window. Because the one thing that you know, everyone's like George Steinbrenner always bought championships. He always went out and gutted the farm system to make these trades. To an extent, that's true. But you know what else George Steinbrenner understood? By keeping some of those guys, making a trade for some of those guys for signing Hideki Arabo and El Duque, by having to get these guys, kept them away from his direct competition. Let's be honest. How can you allow the Houston Astros 2 years ago beat you out for Garrett Cole? You can't allow that. How did you allow the Houston Astros to beat you out for Justin Verlander? Oh, by the way, the only reason they landed Justin Verlander is because they were willing to take on significant money in his contract. They're paying 20 of the $28 million. Whereas the Yankees didn't want to take on that much money for a guy that seemed to be aging.
He wanted to be a Yankee, too. wanted to be.
He wanted to play. He didn't want to play on a rebuilding team. That was his thing. I don't want to play on a rebuilding team. And that to me is where we're going with them.
The bottom line is he has to hit a home run this offseason, period. He has to. Even if you say you didn't trade or you didn't get a starting pitcher because you didn't want to give up talent and teams were trying to rob you of the talent that you have in your minor league system, there is no excuses at this point, Mad Mike. No excuses. You have no excuses. The Yankees have vaults of money. Vaults of it. Vaults of money. So you can't, listen, I don't want to hear this penny pinching nonsense. Like you said, if Garrett Cole wants a 6-year, give him a 6-year. Enough of this already, man. Enough of this.
Yeah, but here's another. You have to hope. You have to hope if Garrett Cole doesn't remember what I just told you, that the Yankees refused. Remember, they said Miguel Andujar, who didn't play this year, and the Yankees got better, was untouchable in that Garrett Cole trade scenario. Remember that. They then said, we will not package Chance Adams and Clint Frazier in the same deal for Garrett Cole. By the way, Chance Adams wasn't on a playoff roster this year, wasn't on a playoff roster last year. Clint Frazier wasn't on a playoff roster this year, and he wasn't on a playoff roster last year. You better hope, like Cliff Lee remembered in 2010, that they, you know what I mean? You better hope he wasn't offended by it and that he's not holding on to that. Because remember what Cliff Lee said. These guys didn't think I was good enough to trade. And with everything even, this is the deal that I thought I had to make. He went to the Philadelphia Phillies.
I mean, damn. I don't know if I necessarily wanted to hear that, but that's fact.
No, I'm just saying. You better remember. Because, listen, if something happens once, that means that there's now precedent for it to repeat itself. That's all I'm saying. Cliff Lee was offended enough 1 year that you didn't trade for him, that he remembered in the offseason and chose not to take your money. I don't see why Garrett Cole wouldn't be offended. I mean, listen, you told Garrett Cole that he wasn't better than Miguel Andujar, Chance Adams, and Clint Frazier. Three guys we're talking about Miguel Andujar, who the Yankees, you remember well, because I remember you yelling at me about it. The Yankees had to go to defensive replacements in a playoff game, an elimination game, for him. Not better than Garrett Cole.
Yeah, well, again, they got to hit a home run this offseason, man. Have to.
You said it.
And let's stop plugging holes. Let's stop, you know, like, it's like fix a flat. Like, let's stop doing it. Because, you know, obviously, if you put fix a flat, eventually you're going to lose air in the tire again. So they have to stop doing this, man. They got the money. Like you said, players, you know, some players are like elephants. They don't forget things. Hopefully that's not the case. And, you know, Francisco Lindor, like, they have to swing for the fences, man, Mike. They have to. They have to. I still think they need two of the three top free agent starters out on the market this year. And again, they had to trade chips to get Francisco Lindor, who doesn't want to be there. You know, I agree on moving, you know, past Didi. You know, you got to let Didi walk, use that money elsewhere, move past Brett Gardner, although I have a strange feeling.
It depends. If Didi's over here talking about, y'all, I'm willing to take 4 years, $55, $60 million,
well, here's
I'd
the thing,
probably
man, like,
do
you know,
it.
We both probably feel that this is probably his best opportunity to make probably the most money that he could make in his career. And I don't necessarily know if he's going to take a discount to stay in New York. He just might, but you know,
but
at
here's
this
the thing, Lord. Is he taking a discount?
I mean,
he's got great defense, but I mean, listen, if
he
he's going to see less
hitting,
than three pitches per...
He wasn't known for hitting when the Yankees got him from Arizona. You know, he just came and he had that excellent season with the Yankees, and then he battled, you know, he hurt his arm and he battled injuries, you know, and he really had an off season this year, you know, but could it be because of him coming back from injury? Who knows? You know, he's, like you said, you know, he's his defensive, you know, Gleyber Torres is just as adequate to him as shortstop, you know, so you really losing that much with Gleyber Torres as shortstop compared to Didi. And like you said, at this point, man, Mike, I'd rather use that money elsewhere, man. You know, use that money elsewhere. Miguel Andujar, you know, we talked about his defense and Gio Urshela's defense. Obviously, Urshela is a, you know, I mispronounced his name. I'm sorry. Urshela is a much better defensive player than Miguel Andujar will be. So where are you going to put Miguel Andujar at?
So, oh, he's got to go. He's got to get traded.
And I agree. And that's why I say, you know, do what you got to do. I don't necessarily know Brian Cashman's philosophy, if he's going to swing for the fences and go aggressively after Lindor, but he should go after aggressive. We both agree that he should go aggressively after Lindor. And it's going to be interesting to see what this offseason brings for the Yankees, man. They really need to hit a home run in this offseason.
Here's another thing for you to consider. When we keep saying they need to hit home runs in the offseason, he didn't build that core of the dynasty. Not only that, but they were already added to. He didn't do any of the adding. Remember something, Derek, Bernie, Posada, you know, the.
Yeah, listen, he broke that down. And I mean, that's a good way to, you know, to bring it across as far as him, you know, not making those moves. Yeah.
He didn't get Cone. He didn't bring Cone. He wasn't responsible for Jimmy Key. He remember something. And this is even more proof to you. You know, Gene Michael is the one that traded Roberto Kelly for Paul O'Neill. You know, not Stick Michaels. Who was the other guy? I'm forgetting. Bob Watson is the one that brought in, you know, help me out here, Joe Girardi, to it. He's the one that built that bullpen. People don't realize that. Cashman gets a lot of credit, but people don't realize that Cashman didn't come in here until 1998. Yeah, he made some great moves. Scott Brosius was a good move. He ended up using his might, financial might, and snagged David Justice for nothing. But when that's why I tell you he's about to miss a window. He's not the one that built that window. He's the one that ended up building on top of that window. But he's not the one that opened that window up in that 90s dynasty. Not the one that brought in the right guys. And that wasn't him. None of that was him.
I'm sure at some point we're going to be doing some more Cashman bashing. But let's take a quick commercial break. Matt, Mike, when we come back, we got to talk basketball as the Nets and Knicks open up their season this week. And we got to talk... yes, some New York Giants football as the Giants lost to the Arizona Cardinals. So we'll be back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listen, it's the first half of the show. We talked about Yankee baseball and their crushing defeat against the Houston Astros, what we feel they need to do in the offseason, our thoughts on Cashman, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. But Mad Mike, this starts the week of the NBA season as our New York Knicks and the Brooklyn Nets open up this week. And the Brooklyn Nets, Mad Mike, finished off the season losing to the Toronto Raptors. I'm sorry, finishing off the preseason losing to the Toronto Raptors 123-107. But the reason why I'm talking about this game, Mad Mike, is because it was Kyrie Irving's first game outside of playing a couple minutes before he re-injured his jaw or his face or whatever it was. And he scored 19 in his New York Nets debut. And the final score was forgettable. And the performance had Kenny Atkinson talking about getting back to the basics with 5 days to go before the Nets opened the regular season this Wednesday. But ultimately, Mad Mike, Brooklyn got what it needed most out of his regular season finale, or preseason finale, I should say. And that was 25 minutes of basketball from Kyrie Irving. All right, Irving had been held out of Brooklyn's previous preseason home game 2 weeks ago and played just 1 minute, like I mentioned, you know, in two games in China. So this was his first game in Brooklyn in a Brooklyn Nets uniform at the Barclays Center. And he and his starters played most of the first half, and they were tied with the Toronto Raptors 28-28 after one period before Toronto kind of broke things apart and pulled away in the second quarter. And Irving had a pretty good debut, man, Mike. Like I said, finishing with 19 points, 4 assists, and 3 rebounds. So the key is, man, Mike, is, you know, Kenny Atkinson, to me, he has to settle the rotation. And he described the final preseason game as a dress rehearsal. And obviously things changed between then and opening night, you know, but there aren't that many clues on how Brooklyn rotation is going to shape out. You know, Atkinson went 10 deep in the first half. You know, he started Irving, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, Torian Prince, and Jared Allen. You know, with the second unit of Spencer Dinwiddie, Garrett Temple, David Nwaba, Volbus Kukoc, and DeAndre Jordan. So it wasn't until the fourth quarter that Atkinson dug deep into the bench. Obviously, you know, there's been games where Jared Allen has come off the bench and DeAndre Jordan has started. So we're going to see, you know, how this pans out with the Brooklyn Nets. I think the Brooklyn Nets have a decent basketball team good enough to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference because the Eastern Conference is so bad. But obviously, Kyrie Irving has been an off-injured player in his career, and there's no way I see him playing a full season in a Brooklyn Nets uniform without injuring himself to some extent, Mad Mike. But
he's only played one preseason game, and he's already suffered two facial injuries this offseason. I think the one thing for Brooklyn, and I'm not saying they're not going to be a good team this year, but I do think that people are going to have to be a little bit patient with them because they didn't build any chemistry this offseason. And unfortunately for them, they lost a lot of play. Like, they brought back players, but there's a lot of new faces on that team. Like you just said, Kenny Atkins has to figure out a new rotation. Not only that, but he's got to figure a way to keep some other guys, you know, Caris LeVert healthy, and they can't afford injuries, this team.
No, I agree. They can't afford injuries, but again, because the Eastern Conference is so bad, I do see the Brooklyn Nets grabbing a playoff spot. It could be anywhere, excuse me, Mike, from 6 to 8. You know, I'm not sold on Miami. I'm not really sold on Indiana. And what I mean by sold on, I mean like, as them being a lock to make the playoffs.
If Victor Oladipo is fully recovered from the ACL, I like Indiana. I really do. Like, they made the playoffs without their best player last year. That's not a bad sign.
No, it's not a bad sign, but what I'm saying is, you know, the thing with this is that we can debate. You know what I'm saying? We can go back and forth and debate on if, you know, they're a lock or if they're going to make the playoffs. And that's the point that I'm pretty much making with this team, Matt, you know, with the Brooklyn Nets, I mean, with the Indiana and some of these other teams that are in the Eastern Conference. You know, is Charlotte a surefire to make the playoffs? You know, is, you know, Philly. We say Milwaukee, Boston, and I'll give Toronto, you know, obviously you can't sell Toronto short. You know, obviously Kawhi Leonard was a big reason as to why they won an NBA championship, but they're still a solid basketball team. So I just named four teams that I consider a lock, in my opinion, to make the Eastern Conference playoffs, man, Mike. But now you have four slots with a bunch of teams that are question marks, in my opinion. And then you have some teams that are stronger suited to make those, to gain one of those spots than others, like Brooklyn, and like Indiana, you know, but then that still leaves, even if we say, let's just say we slide in Brooklyn and Indiana to those two slots, that still leaves two slots open, Mad Mike, for everybody else. And I do think if you win 40 games in the Eastern Conference, that's enough to get you into the 7th or 8th seed.
Yeah, but you're right. I think what makes Brooklyn a great team is the idea of a healthy Kevin Durant. It's the same thing. And I'd be having the same conversation with you and telling you the same things if the Knicks had made these two signings. I don't think Kyrie Irving makes anybody a great team. I think he proved that with the Boston Celtics. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go out on a record and tell you, I think Boston is going to be head and shoulders better than they were last year with Kemba Walker in the mix, because I think Kemba Walker is infectious. I think Kemba Walker has a way of maybe not necessarily making the guys around him better with his play, but I think he makes everybody play harder with his play. Like, he puts his heart and soul into it.
He's not a selfish ball player. He's not selfish.
And that's my point. And when he talks in the locker room, when he talks to the media, he's not over here looking to blame everybody. We're talking about a guy who really didn't want to leave Charlotte. We're talking about a guy who took the money to stay there and tried to build a winner, and it just didn't work. Kyrie on the other end, I mean, we're talking about, think about it. Kyrie Irving, Taurean Prince, Joe Harris, Jared Allen, and Caris LeVert. That's their starting five. Is that a title contending starting five?
No way.
Kyrie Irving, Taurean Prince, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, and Jared Allen. That's not a title contending team. Now, if you want to tell me now we're going to go in there and we're going to insert Kevin Durant in one of those spots, then we're having a different conversation. So I personally think it's going to take a lot of time. And because of all the money they're paying those two guys, their bench is not all that great, man. It's really not. Go look at the bench. The bench is what? Spencer Dinwiddie, Garrett Temple, Rodion Kurix, you know, DeAndre Jordan, and Nwaba. Like, it's really not the greatest bench either.
How bad the Eastern, even with you bringing up though that point, and that's a great point, that just goes to show how bad the Eastern Conference is. Because if this team was in the Western Conference, they wouldn't stand a chance.
No. Not without Kevin Durant. But like I said, if you put Kevin Durant in there, now I think we're having this top two or three conversation, maybe even top one, title contending team. Without him, I think that the Nets are I'm not going to say they're an average team. They're probably an above average team. But I don't think that they're any better than I don't think they're better than Boston. I think that, like you saw the other final game, I think Toronto can play with them with this roster, even without Kawhi Leonard. I think Toronto can play with them. Indiana can play with them. Milwaukee can play with them. There's not much that separates them. As a matter of fact, I think Milwaukee's a better team than them without Kevin Durant.
Yeah, no, I agree. 1,000% I agree. But, I mean, this is a team, again, that we, you know, they should make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, I don't think I would be surprised if they did make it. You know, I really don't.
They don't make the playoffs. If Kevin Durant doesn't come back at all this year and Kyrie misses significant time, this team misses the playoffs. I'll say it.
All right. Listen, we both agree that D'Angelo Russell was a huge reason why this team made the playoffs last season. Huge reason why. And he fit the Brooklyn Nets perfectly. Perfectly.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, I don't think they wanted to move on from D'Angelo. I don't. I think that if Kevin Durant would have committed to them, and keeping D'Angelo, I think that's the route they would have taken. They spent 3 years developing this kid. They traded for this kid, they developed him, they made him a star. I'm 100% positive that they would not have moved on. But Kevin Durant wanted Kyrie Irving. He wasn't going to come if Kyrie was an option. Mm. So they moved on, and I think that they made a mistake moving on.
All right, so now let's move on to bigger and better things, in my opinion, Mad Mike. And let's talk about our New York Knickerbockers. And I watched every preseason game, as I'm sure you watched every preseason game. And I literally think, Mad Mike, that to me, this is a telltale sign on if David Fizdale is the right man for this team, because he doesn't have a bunch of scrubs like he, and not that he had scrubs last year, but there's no excuses with this team, man, Mike. This team that the Knicks have right now is good enough to earn a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Would you agree with me?
If everything breaks right, yes. But I'm going to be very honest with you. I think that they did this 1 year too soon. They still have a lot of developing to do, man. We're talking about Wayne Ellington taking minutes away from...
You know, them signing too many vets, and you was afraid that it was going to hinder the growth of the younger players, man, Mike. And guess who I saw on the bench quite a bit in the preseason? Alonzo Trier, Kevin Knox.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, it's not... You know, it's funny. It's really funny when you follow Scott Perry, and I did say, you know, I was saying you got to give these guys a chance, but you know, it's funny when you listen to some of the talking that some of these people have done, right? Vlade Divac talking about how they had to commit for Sacramento to take that next step past year. They had to commit to their younger players. They had to stop feeling like veterans will help develop the younger players. Yes, veterans, like remember Kurt Thomas when he got here and Rasheed Wallace, veterans that aren't looking to still get a majority of the minutes, guys that are coming in here that are willing to train, teach, that are willing to be a part of it but don't have to be the focus, those are the guys that help young players develop. What the Knicks did was went and got guys that are going to stunt the growth of their players. And you already hear David Fizdale. I mean, I love Marcus Morris in the preseason. I love the way he's talking, but is it worth it if Marcus Morris is going to put Kevin Knox to the bench? Is it worth it if Taj Gibson is is stunting the development and you know, time on the court for Mitchell Robinson? Is Wayne Ellington stealing minutes from RJ Barrett? Good for this team. You already see the issue that they're having at the point guard position with Frank and Dennis Smith are now fighting for scraps because Alfred Payton's going to start.
Yeah, listen, I tell you this much, man. Watching this team play, Mad Mike, it's so much isolation going on, man. And it's so funny because David Fizdale was quoted saying ball movement issues are a problem. Well, you're the damn coach. How can you say ball issues are a problem if you're the coach and this team from preseason game to preseason game hasn't shown any signs of moving the ball around the court? One player gets the ball, Mad Mike, and the other four players go around the perimeter. I mean, the three-point line on the opposite side of where the guy who has the ball is dribbling. How in the hell do you even get a rebound in a situation like that? How do you get slants and cuts to the basket or for picks if that's the type of offensive setup you have? So if you're complaining as a coach, as ball movement, shouldn't you be the one to change that? To make sure that's corrected from preseason game to preseason game? I couldn't believe I read this comment from him. And I was a supporter of Fizdale. And you was like, wait a minute, Lloyd. Like, I'm not a fan of this dude. Then you was like, you know what? Maybe I'll give him a chance. And I'm sitting here like, yo, this is the make or break year for me as a fan when it comes to Coach Fizdale, man, Mike.
Because how can a coach who goes out of his way to admonish and bench Frank Ntilikina preach ball movement and defense when he benches the most unselfish player on the team and probably best perimeter defender because he's not aggressive enough on offense? How can you preach things that he's talking to us about? I just said this about the Yankees, and I'm going to say it about the New York Knicks and David Fizdale. Your actions can't contradict the words that are coming out of your mouth if you want us to take you seriously. They can't. Can't tell me defense matters, but I'm going to put Alonzo Trier. Perfect example. Alonzo Trier should never replace Frank Ntilikina in a lineup, in a rotation. Those are the things that matter to you. And I'm not, and this is not a knock on Alonzo Trier because, once again, like we just said, if he's on a bench, he's not developing. You're not breaking the mold of who he is as a player if you're not teaching him and letting him get on the court and make those mistakes and learn how to share the ball.
Yeah, Alonzo's definitely ISO. Yeah, dude, he's definitely ISO. ISO Zone.
Yeah, but. Yeah, that's my point. But you want to know what the Knicks embraced that moniker last year? They embraced that. Remember, I told you. I said I don't want to hear that nickname. First thing I do is I break them out of that nickname. I don't want to hear anybody call ISOZO. I said it last year, and I'm saying it again now.
Okay, so before we move on to football, man, Mike. All right, do the Knicks win? This is the over-under. We'll go with 35 wins. Over-under 35 wins for the New York Knicks this year.
Under. But I honestly, even if the Knicks got to 30 wins, it's still a successful season. In my opinion. But hey, listen, I'm going under because it's the safer way to do it. And what we've learned is best-case scenario is usually the least likely scenario, especially with the Knicks. But I think the Knicks have the kind of team that can be in contention into late March, you know, really late March, maybe early April. Like, I think they have the kind of talent that can do it, yeah, but I don't think they will because I don't think they have the coach.
I have to go over 35, and here's why I'm going over 35, man, Michael, for one reason only. I predicted that this team was going to make the playoffs. And like I said, I think 40 wins gets you a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference this year. So for that reason alone, I can't go back against my prediction. I gotta stick with my gut, Mad Mike. I gotta stick with it. And for that reason alone, I'm saying the Knicks are gonna be over 35 wins this year. I think they got a good enough team again to snatch a seventh seed or eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. Again, I think coaching, I have a big to do with this. I really do. I really do. All this mixed matching and playing this guy one game and sending him down the next game. And, you know, you got to have a consistent rotation of players going on during the season. And you have to preach ball movement and you have to preach defense. This team got killed behind, as far as defending a three-point shot in the preseason, Mad Mike. Killed. Man, their defense against the three-point shot is putrid. I'm like, wow, really? You got to do better than that, man. And we, you know, we always say defense is very important, and you always preach defense when it comes to the New York Knicks. If they don't play well defensively, Mad Mike, my prediction is going out the window real quick. It's going out the window real quick. So obviously the season starts. We have a lot to, you know, talk about basketball-wise moving forward, listeners. But there was some football played yesterday, and the Jets play later tonight against the New England Patriots, Mad Mike. And obviously, you know, we talked about Sam Darnold, and I told you that the problem with your team was that they had, and you agreed, they had somebody by the name of Luke Falk at the quarterback position who they promptly released after Darnold was, you know, and Darnold played a solid game, you know, against the, who did they beat?
Cowboys.
Against the Cowboys, Mad Mike. And I still think, when I looked at the standings, Mad Mike, the teams in the AFC, second place teams have 3 wins and 2 wins, and the Jets have 1. So they're still really, obviously in their conference, because you have Buffalo 6-1 and New England, you know, obviously it's going to be tough for them possibly, you know, to win the AFC East. But I still think that they have a shot at getting a wild card spot, man, Mike. I do.
I'm going to be honest. I think it's over. But the reason I think it's over is because I think Buffalo is a lock to make the playoffs. And remember, there's 4 divisions in each conference, right? So,
if you throw New England, they'll win the wild card spot. So that leaves 1 wild card spot available.
So yeah, it really leaves just 1 team. And I just think that when you get off to the 0-4 start, that I just don't think it's possible. And I think it's pretty sad because, like you said, and you know, we saw it. Sam Darnold is all the difference in the world. He just is. But I just think when you have a coach, I was disgusted when I heard this last week. I know we weren't on the air, but I was going to rant about it. When ESPN put out that report that Adam Gase was willing to give up games with Luke Falk and call a bland offense because he didn't want to show. You know, he didn't like his odds of winning, so he didn't want to show his hand with his offense. You can't do that. You know, this league is week to week, man. There's only 17 weeks of the season, 16 games. You can't do that, man. You can't throw away games. These guys went out there and played. You know, you lost guys. Jordan Jenkins got hurt in the Cleveland game, and he hasn't been back. You got other guys that went out there and tried to win games. And as a coach, you're making the offense real vanilla. I mean, Le'Veon Bell has played like 92% of all snaps. He wasn't guaranteed to come out, you know, of this healthy. What are you doing? That's as one, it's arrogant on Adam Gase's part. It's ignorance on Adam Gase's part. And it's irresponsible on Adam Gase's part. There's any truth to that article or report. You can't do that, man. It kills me. But I think it's over. I do want them to play hard and finish up. So maybe they can get back to 8-8. But yeah.
Sorry. So let me ask you this question, man, Mike, because I think this is going to happen tonight. I think the Jets are going to beat the Patriots. And if the Jets do beat the Patriots, do you change your thought on if you think the season is over or the Jets at 2-4? At this point, do you think that puts them into possibly being a playoff team?
I think if the Jets get to 2-4, I do think they're going to go back into the conversation simply because I think that, especially with Nick Folk out at in Jacksonville and Gardner Minshew in, I don't think anybody thought that. I thought 2-4 was best case scenario in everybody's mind anyway. Getting to you know, out of these first seven weeks or whatever it was, I think everyone thought that they'd go something like 2-4, 2-5. So if they won tonight, and then, you know, that Jacksonville game's pretty winnable. No Jalen Ramsey, no Folk, you know, they're playing, you know, nail biters themselves with a healthy Sam. If you can get to 3-4 with as weak as the Jets' second half schedule is, I think they're going to be in a mix. And I think that that's what they're banking on.
I agree. Like I said, I still think that this team has a great shot. And I'm picking them to beat New England later on tonight, man, Mike. But let's talk about the New York Giants. And literally, for fans suffering a sports hangover Sunday afternoon in the wake of our Yankees playoff exit and the action of MetLife Stadium, didn't provide much of the way to relieve us from that, man, Mike. It really didn't. Saquon Barkley returned from a high ankle sprain, and it was not enough to spark the Giants to victory as they fumbled away two late chances for game-winning drives. They lost 27-21 to the Cardinals. All right, and after letting the Cardinals backup running back, Chase Edmonds, the pride of Fordham, still a show early, the Giants had to recover multiple shots, and they had a chance to win it. Okay, first they got the ball in. Listen, Mad Mike, there was like 2 minutes and 23 seconds left in the game, and the Giants had a third. It was third down and like 15, or third down and 16, and I think they gained 3 yards, Mad Mike. So let me ask you this question, and I just want to see if you agree with me on this. So it was fourth down and 13, okay, with 2 minutes and 20-some seconds left, and the Giants had two timeouts. Why in the hell did Pat Shurmur not punt the ball? Because the defense, at that point, the defense was playing better. So you got the two-minute warning, and then you have two timeouts. That equals three timeouts. Why in the hell didn't he punt the ball, Matt Mike? Pin him down the field, get the ball back for better field position, and turn, you go for it on 4th and 13. Daniel Jones, again, I don't know if he threw an interception or if it was an incomplete pass or whatever, but the odds was not great going into that play to begin with. And then you turn, you give the ball to Arizona with great field position on their behalf. It just didn't make any sense to me, man. No sense whatsoever. And as weeks go on and weeks go on, and this defense just gets completely dissected, I'm losing. Listen, I'm not even expecting this team to win football games, because I said it multiple times. This is a 3-win football team, and they already got 2 wins.
I think Daniel Jones has gotten worse.
I may give him four. You know where their third one is going to come? They might beat Miami. I don't think they're going to beat the Redskins again. I can't see them beating Dallas. I can't see them beating Philly twice.
They might not be able to beat the Jets.
They're not going to beat the Jets because the defense is so bad. I was going back and forth with a friend. He was like, oh, the Giants are going to beat Arizona. No, they're not. Because the Giants' defense is awful. And this is the reason why this is going to be a 3-4 win football team, Matt Mike, because the defense is awful. They can't stop anybody.
Yeah, but you know what, Lloyd? The offense wasn't very good either.
The offense did put up 21 points, Matt Mike.
No, they didn't. They put up 14 points.
What was the final score?
Touchdown. They scored a touchdown.
I think whatchamacallit blocked a punt.
And that's what I'm saying. They had a punt return, a punt block for a touchdown. So the offense only put up 14.
But they knocked that off the defense, you know. So if we're going to talk about, I think the Giants' offense is in better shape than their defense. If anything, it's play calling.
And I'll tell you another thing that bothered me. And Greg Olsen, when he was calling the game, when he first saw it, he was like, oh, what a great pass by Daniel Jones on the first touchdown. And then when they showed the replay, it was an awful throw. It was the wrong decision to make. But Baker, Bud Baker, for some reason, he didn't see What's the tight end's name? The pass blocking tight end,
Rhett Ellison.
Boom! Didn't see Rhett Ellison. How do you not see him? He literally went to the spot where the ball was coming, and you saw him. He kind of crouched down, ready to make a play. He just thought the ball was going to come into the breadbasket instead of. And that's what Greg Olsen said. When Greg Olsen saw the replay, he was like, "Oh man, I don't know what Baker was doing there. He had to make a play on the ball." And I'm like, exactly, dude. That doesn't mean it was a good throw. That means it was actually a bad throw and should have been intercepted. The guy made just a poor decision. And I don't know, man. I don't like you said, I don't like how they're being coached. Going forward on that fourth down. It wasn't just going forward on the fourth down. The other part of the problem that I saw with that is it was 3rd and 20. And they called that 5-yard draw to Saquon Barkley. If you knew you were going for it on a fourth down, what are you doing calling the draw?
Yeah. Yeah, that listen, man. And you know, a couple shows ago, man, Mike, you know, I said, fans, pump your brakes about Daniel Jones because he won those two games against Tampa Bay and Washington. I said he's going to be going up against some good defenses. And Minnesota and New England. And Arizona's not a good defense, but how many turnovers did he have in this game, man, Mike? So the bottom line,
three fumbles and an interception?
The reason why I'm saying this, man, Mike, he is not worthy of a 6th pick in the NFL draft. He is not an elite quarterback. Not an elite quarterback. And I see this scenario happen for the Giants over again at some point, man, Mike, where the Giants are going to bring in another quarterback, and he's going to end up as a backup.
But you know, again, it's crazy, Lord.
Because the Giants might look stupid and they don't want to do that for picking him with the number 6 pick. You know what I'm saying? They're going to have to try to force feed a reason to keep him there because of that. He's not a 6 pick. He's not worthy of a 6 pick, man, Mike. I just don't see it. Even with him going through his learning curves as a rookie quarterback, he is not worthy of the 6 pick in the NFL draft when you have so many other things that you need to address,
I said it last week, and I think he played better this week. But I said I've never seen a guy who's gotten worse in every single start, but the hype has gotten more real in every set. So the hype for Daniel Jones has increased every single start, even though he has played worse. Remember something? They told us, well, he doesn't have the help. Everybody's hurt. What's he supposed to do? He's out there by himself. Well, this past week, he got everybody back, right? He got Evan Engram back, Golden Tate is back. I mean, Sterling Shepard's still out with a concussion, but if we're saying Daniel Jones needs Sterling Shepard, then you know, you should fire the GM right now. Saquon Barkley was back. So to me, I'm just like, you know, this was supposed to be the breakout game. And instead, really, there was nothing going on. I mean, until midway through the fourth quarter when they went on that final drive, nothing.
Yeah.
Another game where he had under 200 yards. Another game where you know, he had more turnovers again than touchdowns. On the season, he's got 5 fumbles and 2 rushing touchdowns. He's got 6 passing touchdowns and 7 interceptions. Let's do the math. That's 12 total turnovers and 8 touchdowns, 12 turnovers in 5 games, Lord.
Yeah.
The hype?
That doesn't. I agree, and that doesn't equal. Like I said, pump your brakes, listeners. Pump your brakes, and Mad Mike is dishing out the facts. And listen, that's enough said right there. Let's move on to these grades, Mad Mike. Let's start with the offense. You know, with the New York Giants offense, I think. Look, you're beating no one if you give up 8 sacks. You're not going to beat anyone. And if rookie quarterback Daniel Jones is under duress, which he was, he turns the ball over 3 times. Okay? 3 more. 1 interception, 2 fumbles lost. He was 22 of 35, 233 yards. He had 4 rushes for 35 yards. He had some bright moments. But consider this is a dark period in his development.
There were 12
Barkley had 18 rushes for 72 yards. You know, it was helpful. But not all inspiring. The line was the worst it's been all season, man, Mike. And made Chandler Jones, who had 4 sacks by himself, 1 forced fumble, 1 fumble recovery, look like a farmer. bad drop by Evan Engram, which you've been very critical of him, on what should have been at least a 24-yard gain, followed by a holding penalty on Will Hernandez that negated a 37-yard run by Saquon Barkley. I'm giving this offense an F, man.
I gave them a D. I know that they gave up 8 sacks. I know that Daniel Jones is a mobile quarterback, and I think that's why a lot of people don't pick up on this, but actually got text by somebody in the industry, and they said, if he wasn't as mobile as he is, you'd question his pocket presence. You know, he doesn't feel
sometimes. You're right. He gets stripped.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why he's been stripped. And remember something, I just finished saying it. He's got 5 fumbles lost. He's got more fumbles than 5 on a season. 5 of them have been lost. Yeah. 5 lost fumbles for a quarterback in 5 games, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's awful.
So to me, I think because he's a mobile guy, people think he has better presence than he does in a pocket. I don't think he has very good pocket presence. I was going to go after Evan Engram, but you did it for me. Guy can't block, and he drops way too many important passes to be a receiving tight end. We saw Rhett Ellison was so much better than him. He was just so much better than him in the passing game, which says a lot. I gave the offense a D, but I could see it easily have been an F.
Okay, so now let's move on to the defense. All right, and I mentioned that man, Chase Edmonds, who had 27 rushes for 126 yards and made the Giants look like Lehigh of Lafayette. You know, as the former Fordham running back, listen, man, he did as he pleased. 3 touchdowns on runs of 20 or more yards. Rookie quarterback Kyler Murray, 14 to 21, 104 yards, was solid early, and then, you know, told to hand the ball off and get out of the way. Why would he pass if this Edmonds was running all over the Giants? This defense was especially bad in the first half, man, Mike, allowing the Cardinals to convert 5 of 7 third downs. Terrible tone is set early, and only the Murray pass deflected. Lorenzo Carter got it. And that's not enough. Pass interference penalty on Janoris Jenkins again, which I thought was bogus. It was a bogus call. The wide receiver tripped over his own feet. And what's the sense of having this damn replay, man, Mike, if you're not going to overturn calls? Why not have it called up from the booth? If you're trying to avoid a situation that happened in the Rams-Saints game, you know what I'm saying? This is so stupid. This thing that they're trying to experiment with is so dumb. Because there's blatant calls that are pass interference that, you know, it's like, okay, we don't want the referees to look bad by overturning all these calls. That was not a pass interference. But I knew they wasn't going to overturn it. I knew they wasn't going to overturn it. I knew it. And it's, oh, man. I'm giving this team a D, man, Mike. The offense. I'm giving the offense a D. You know what? Let me rephrase. I'll give them an F because they did play better the second half. But I'm giving them an F.
I gave the defense an F. I mean, it was 17-0 in the first quarter. If Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray weren't so overrated, I mean, and I'm kind of tired of hearing people call him special. I'm having this conversation with Joe Rivera Sporting News watching the game, and I'm saying he has to put everything he has into every throw. I've never seen that before. Everything, and you know, everyone talks about his arm strength. I saw a receiver beat one of the DBs on the Giants, and he just couldn't get the ball out there. Like, the ball just died, and both guys are sitting there waiting for it to come down. Like, literally stopped running, turned around, and I'm like, where's the arm strength? Yeah, this kid's an athlete, but they you know, if the Giants just put their arms up at the line, they would have tipped, 100 passes, right? Every single pass. I mean, 14 for 21 he was, but I think his average pass was like 5.3 yards per attempt. So I thought, you know, the Giants did a bad job there, because if you know that a guy isn't going to beat you deep, stack the box. They were already, like you said, they were already down to their second string running back. So you shouldn't have much fear there. Their receivers are not very good. But for some reason, they couldn't stop the run. They were leaving the big cutback holes for Edmonds. I didn't like what I see. But you know what? I don't like what I see from that defense every week. It's just weird to me, man. You had Lorenzo Carter with a late hit on a sliding quarterback, giving himself up for the penalty, which was a killer, and allowing them to they didn't really get after the quarterback either. And I know that a lot of people are like, well, Kyler Murray is just really good in the pocket. He's a mobile quarterback. It's hard to sack him. No, they just don't get that much pressure. They just not enough for and what I mean is, Arizona has a bad offensive line. That's what I mean. And this comes down to me coaching. You got to be able to scheme as a defensive coordinator, take advantage of that offensive line. And they just didn't do enough, so I gave them an F.
All right, so now let's move on to special teams. And I thought it was a huge momentum swing when Michael Thomas blocked the punt and Eli Penny recovered it in the end zone for a touchdown. And then it was a huge momentum downer when Aldrick Rojas hit the right upright on a 37-yard field goal attempt in the third quarter. So why in the world did rookie Darius Slayton take a kickoff return out of the end zone in the last 2 minutes? He only made it to the 12-yard line. Riley Dixon got a third, quarter punt block. Golden Tate had a 7-yard punt return. You know, with all that being said, man, Mike, I'm going to give them a C+. Special teams.
I gave the special teams an F. Here's why. They had the punt block for the touchdown, which probably gives you automatically an A, right? Then they had the Aldrick Rojas missed field goal, so we're going to knock that down from an A, let's say, to a B. They also had a partially blocked punt, I want to tell you, in the third quarter. So now we're going to knock that all the way down to a C. And then what the turning point for me was when you bring that ball out at the end of the game on a final drive, I'm giving you an F for this reason. The Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury showed their overratedness and how stupid they are when on third down, Kyler Murray doesn't stay in bounds, take the sack, field goal, whatever you want to do. They actually call a pass play, and Kyler Murray has no one to throw the ball to, and he runs out of bounds. So not only did he stop the clock for them, allowing them to keep the two-minute warning, you, on the other hand, bring the ball out, and you only make it back to the 12-yard line. You started the clock, and you lost 13 yards. So you lost, I want to tell you, there was something like 7 seconds on bringing it out, and then you lost 12 yards. You can't have that, 13 yards, whatever it was. That's just, it's dumb coaching, it's dumb playing, and I knocked it all the way down to an F for that reason.
All right, fair enough. Now let's move on to the coaching. And the last 4.5 minutes put together by Pat Shurmur will not be sent to Canton, Ohio, in my damn opinion. You know, as a how instructional video on game management, if you have determined this 2-down territory, like you said, why in the hell run a draw play on 3rd and 18? Shurmur lost a challenge trying to get a pass interference penalty overruled, and he might as well quit now, you know, because it's basically a waste of time and energy. Run defense execution by James Betcher defense was rotten in the first half. What's the worst grade that we can give the coaches? What's the worst grade we can give, Mad Mike?
I'm giving them they're an F. They're an F.
I want to give them an F, but I want to give them something worse than an F.
Let's give them a Z. It's the last letter in the alphabet.
Yeah, let's give them a Z. I'm giving this coaching staff a Z for that reason. Thank you, Mad Mike. It's, last letter in the alphabet, Z.
We already touched on it. You know, they just... James Betcher not taking advantage of a porous scheming to take advantage of a porous offensive line. This offense was really bad. They only put up 14 points, and once again, I guess you can say the answer in the first half when it was down 17-0, but that ball should have been intercepted. And then the final touchdown. When Arizona is, I don't know, man. I don't have any words for it. I think it's a really bad coaching staff. And the worst part about it is they're going to have to start over. You're going to reset development of some of these kids. Every week we see it. It's just like you mentioned, the clock management, the third down play call if you're going to go for it on fourth down, the lack of aggression at times, the just a lot of things that just don't make sense. It's bad coaching, man. It's just they're poorly coached.
All right, so now can we move on to bigger and better things, which is your rant of the week, man, Mike. Hit the listeners and hit me with what's your rant for the week. Please spare me from this Giants talk.
Chains, tattoos, dreads, and we are Penn State. I don't know if you heard while we were, on hiatus last week, but, this guy, Dave Peterson, wrote a letter to the players, to really one player on Penn State. And I'm not going to read the entire letter, but there's no place in the world for this, man. And at some point, we as a people are going to have to just say, this is unacceptable. And these people, we got to weed them out of society. We absolutely have to, writing things like, telling him that his dreads were disgusting. He has awful hair. Surely there must be mirrors in the locker room. Don't you have parents or a girlfriend who have told you those shoulder length dreadlocks look disgusting and certainly are not attractive? I'm quoting. I'm not paraphrasing. I am quoting and saying that. Shame on you. Shame on you. We would welcome the reappearance of dress codes for our athletes. You will certainly be playing on Sunday in the future, but we have stopped watching the NBA, the NFL due to disgusting tattoos, awful hair, and immature antics in the end zone. For the glory, Dave Peterson. Are you kidding me, Lloyd? Yeah, in today's day and age, you feel like you can write that letter. And to me, at this point, not even hide. They're hiding in plain sight. You wrote this letter and sent it to a college kid. A college kid. Because you once went to and graduated from your alma mater, Penn State. You feel like you have the right to talk to this kid this way? To say these things to this kid because you went to the school, you didn't play the sport. You represented Penn State in a totally different way. Like, how dare you? How dare you? And while I'm at it, LeBron James, it's time for you to shut the F up. Your entire everything you stand for went out the window, in my opinion, when you called Daryl Morey uneducated. We didn't even get a chance to talk about this. But I'm going to tell you something, Lloyd. If you're for the people, if you're for equal rights, you can't turn off and on when you want to be about equal rights. You understand? Colin Kaepernick didn't put money before equal rights. He never once put his NFL career ahead of what he believed in when he was kneeling. The NBA is doing that right now. And some of these players, yeah, I do support certain things. I do support them in certain things, but to call Daryl Morey uneducated because he's standing behind people fighting for democracy, yeah, you're wrong for that. You may disagree because of the billions of dollars and millions of dollars it's costing you because of how uncomfortable it made you while you was in China, but at the same time, he's not uneducated, and he didn't misspeak. He spoke his mind. He's educated in this matter, and it doesn't matter what side you fall on. The fact that LeBron James felt like he could talk out against Daryl Morey when he's over here fighting for the same things at home. We're talking about LeBron James, who openly criticizes our United States president in office. We all do, whether it's justified or not. But don't go at Daryl Morey for criticizing the same kind of things in another place.
I agree, and he's come under scrutiny for that too, LeBron James I'm talking about. You know, this dude has more than enough money. I was talking about this at breakfast. This one, he has more than enough money, Mad Mike. More than enough. He has a platform and a voice to make a difference. And like you said, absolutely right.
No, I understand. And that's why I said, when Steph didn't want to say anything, I to an extent, I defended him. I said, if we're going to cost ourselves hundreds of millions of dollars, if you're not ready to talk about it, then don't talk about it. I'm not going to criticize you if you openly say, hey, I'm not educated enough right now, even though I do think Steph Curry is educated enough. But if you want to say right now is not the right time for me to speak on this, I respect that. Because you know, like I know, a 20-second interview is going to cost you $20 million in the long run. Think twice about it. You know, really think about what you want to say. But LeBron James going at Daryl Morey knew what he wanted to say, and he said it. Don't diminish what he did, because he stood up for a lot of people, and there's a lot of people that support Daryl Morey. Don't do that, LeBron James.
Great rant, man, Mike. Great rant. And with that being said, listeners, that's going to bring us to the close of this week's show. We want to thank you for sticking with us and supporting us, and we want to thank our producer, A.O. Omar Baker, for rocking us out. So we had a lot to talk about, especially after missing last week due to the holiday. But we're back at it, listeners. We're back at it, giving you that real. You know what I'm saying? So listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and Mad Mike can see you in 7 days. Hey, yo, let's roll, baby.
Finally, we've gotten to the start of the NBA season coming up later this week. As always, right here, Lloyd, A. Thompson, and Mad Mike break down everything going on with the Knicks and the Nets. How they look, what the progress looks like, will they make the playoffs or not? Will either of them be a threat if they do make the playoffs? All kind of storylines, how these new players are going to develop, the rookies. I love it. Wonderful time of year. Part of my fresh sports, Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike. Brand new episodes drop every single Monday. So make sure you subscribe everywhere podcasts are available, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can head over to LloydAThompson.com with any questions that you may have. And follow along on Instagram and Twitter at Lloyd A. Thompson. Make sure you put two L's in there. Spell that man's name right. Once again, Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show, part of My Fresh Sports. You can check out part of My Fresh Radio as well, part of My Fresh Wrestling Show. There's all kind of things going on this side of the fence. But nonetheless, subscribe here. Tell your friends about it. Great sports show coming to you every single Monday. Catch y'all in 7 days. Real sports, real talk. Peace.